Yams versus mac and cheese first round is a travesty.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me as always on Twitter at redrock_bball. We are going to be covering the action from Thursday's five NBA games. We're going to talk about some injury news out of Philadelphia, and we're going to preview the nine games in the NBA for Friday while also shining that player spotlight on Reggie Jackson of the Detroit Pistons, Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
That is a really, really good idea. We will go straight away to the monstrous. Actually, no, we won't go there. Let's start with the news out of Philadelphia for Joel Embiid, who got that crack in the head from Markelle Fultz in yesterday's game. Initially, they said no concussion. And then I mentioned on yesterday's podcast that they were going to take him to the hospital. And, maybe let's go and evaluate it and see what it is. Well, they did evaluate it. He does have a concussion. But more importantly, he has an orbital fracture, so a fracture of the bone around the eye socket, and that's almost assuredly going to keep him out of the remainder of the regular season and probably a fair chunk of the first-round playoffs as well, which is obviously a terrible, terrible blow for the NBA, for the Philadelphia 76ers, and your fantasy team if you own Joel Embiid. It's the freak issue causing that fracture in his face. The good news is he'll get to come back with a mask on, assuming the Sixers can actually put themselves into a good position, get good seeding, and win that first round matchup. Maybe he comes back first round, but for the rest of the regular season, I think we can assume Embiid is done, so you drop him. Amir Johnson, assuming he gets over his case of gastroenteritis, he will be the starter, but he is not the center that you want. The guy that you want there is Rashawn Holmes, and they'll probably split minutes, 24 minutes apiece. Some days you'll get 27 out of Rashawn, some days you'll get 20 out of Amir. Some days you'll even get Ersan Ilyasova playing at center for some of those minutes, and perhaps Dario Saric. So it's not going to be that Holmes is going to be this 32-minute monolith, much like Joel Embiid is, because there are other options, and Brett Brown clearly doesn't have trust in Holmes, but in 24 to 25 minutes, he is the guy, as opposed to Johnson, as opposed to Ilyasova, who is going to be able to provide that fantasy value. A high percentage shot blocker, a guy that can give you decent field goal percentage. He can step out and hit threes. He can score a bit. He can get some rebounds. Amir is fine for the deeper leagues, and he clearly gets a bump. But Holmes is the guy that you want to be considering now in your 12-team leagues. And he moves into that sort of Jarrett Allen, Dewayne Dedmon type sphere. I probably have Dedmon marginally ahead of him just for a little bit more consistency in role. Because as I said, Holmes is not playing 30 minutes a night from here on out. I don't believe. We'll see. But I don't believe that'll be the case. And you'll still get Amir Johnson starting. But Rashawn Holmes is the guy that is going to gain that value. Now, if you've got Embiid, a straight drop for Rashawn Holmes might not necessarily be what you need to do. You need to look at your matchup. What do you need? Are your blocks in hand? How are your rebounds looking? What's your field goal percentage? Do you desperately need assists? Then dropping Embiid for a waiver wire point guard. Do you go and grab Quinn Cook, who should be owned quite clearly? Do you go and grab, insert other guy, Isaiah Taylor from Atlanta? Do you use that spot for streaming? Is that more valuable than Rashawn Holmes? In a lot of cases, the answer to that's going to be yes. Not in every case, but in a lot of those cases, that's what the answer is going to be. So it's not like drop Embiid, add Holmes. And he's not a must-own guy right across the board. There's a lot of different things that you do need to pay attention to. But this opens up the opportunity for Holmesy to have a pretty strong last week or so of the season. Let's go now on to the monstrous line of the night. It is Gianni Antetokounmpo, as the Milwaukee Bucks traveled on the road to beat the Golden State Warriors. 32-4-5 for Antetokounmpo, 2 triples and 2 steals, and a brilliant 14 of 18 from the field, and a perfect 2 of 2 from the free throw line. He is the 7th ranked player this season. After starting out hot, he has faded, but over the last 2 weeks, he's back to the number 2 guy, mainly because he's shooting 61% and 82% from the field and from the line. And I talk about it all the time, but those big field goal percentage spikes and dips really do influence players' rankings over short-term periods. And we're seeing that with Antetokounmpo at the moment, a really large jump. If you look at Z-score values, so he's shooting 54% for the year, and he's at a 2Z score for his field goal percentage. Over the last 2 weeks, he's up to 61%, but that almost doubles the Z score value up to 3.9 there. So it shows you just how much, and obviously 54 to 61 isn't a doubling of field goal percentage, but showing you just how much that extra impact is and how important it can be to your fantasy team. He's been elite, 27.5, 10 boards, 4.5 assists, 0.6 triples, which over the last month is at one a game, which is a really encouraging sign for next season. And he's gone the 1.5 steals and 1.5 blocks, 54 and 76% from the field and from the line, respectively. He is your monstrous line of the night. The waiver wire line of the night is also the young gun of the night, and that's Quinny Cook of the Golden State Warriors. 30 points with 5 triples, 4 rebounds and 3 assists, and his shooting was elite as well. 12 of 15 from the field, and he hit his only free throw. It's amazing that he has been on the Pelicans and on the Hawks in the last 12 months. Imagine, look, you could make an argument that he is a better player than Rajon Rondo. You'd probably lose that argument, but I could see that. Dennis Schroeder, he has his foibles. Cook, I thought, showed quite a bit when he played for New Orleans last season through Summer League, and I've said this before, but he has been ridiculously good over the last 2 weeks. He's a top 25 player. He's locked in as the starting point guard, and yes, that usage of 23%, which he's had over the last 2 weeks, will dip once Durant plays a full game and when Klay Thompson's back next game. But the really high percentage shooting, the threes, the assists, the steals, there is some value there. He has to be owned in pretty much all leagues. The Warriors have a Saturday-Sunday back-to-back. Not that you'd necessarily be wanting to use him on Sunday, but given how well he's playing, he probably fits into your best 10 players. And that game comes against the Suns. They've got a Kings-Suns sandwich on Saturday-Sunday. And that's absolutely ridiculously good value for a point guard. So, of course, Quinn Cook needs to be owned. What happens with him over the course of the next few seasons remains to be seen. He is 25 years of age. I did play a spotlight him, I think, last week and spoke about him at length, but he can be a starting point guard on a bad team in this league. Would he be better than Cameron Payne and Chris Dunn? Probably. Definitely not defensively with Dunn, but yeah, there is still value in that, and he can be, you know, is he better than Trey Burke? Probably. As much as people love Trey Burke, he's probably a better option there than him. There are many spots for Cook. It just depends on how that all pans out. This has been an excellent run for him, but it hasn't been 100% unprecedented given, you know, how well we have seen him in other stops and just didn't seem to get the opportunity that I thought he was deserving of. The dart of the night. Tell a man's not hot. Probably a little bit unfair, this one, but there weren't really too many terrible performances from highly owned players. Steven Adams had 10 and 13. He was 5 of 11 from the field, and he missed both of his free throws. Those subpar percentages dipped his numbers down, but realistically, there was no one else that was terrible on this slate that didn't get either ejected or injured. Adams has been great this year. He's cemented himself as a top 65 player on the back of some really high field goal percentage, 63% for the year. That's his career high. The free throws, still an issue, never a really big shot blocker. The rebounds have been really nice from him, a really big increase there, which is something we didn't necessarily think would be the case, but he's jumped up there at 14 points, an increase in his efficiency. Usage the same, but his efficiency has jumped up, meaning those extra points are coming his way. Really not too much to look at with this dart of the night, just that it was a very strong field from the majority owned fantasy players, and Adams's percentages let you down a little bit. So nothing to get overly worked up about there, I don't think. All right, let's move on and talk about these games across the NBA that we had. As I said, there were 5 games on Thursday. Yep, always get my dates mixed up. The first one of those, the Washington Wizards and the Detroit Pistons. Johnny Wall was not back. He was listed as questionable but didn't play. And then Otto Porter went down with an ankle injury. X-rays are negative for Porter, and they think it's going to be okay, but you would expect maybe one game, maybe 2 games missed for Porter. And again, with many leagues finishing on Sunday, if you need to make a move and get an extra player in, perhaps you have to drop him. Maybe it's for his a likely replacement, Kelly Oubre, who had 14 and 4 with a steal and a block. Oubre is a very, very strong add at this point as well. Markieff Morris, 11, 6 and 5, 1 steal and 4 blocks. Really filling it up right across the box score. 36 minutes for Morris. Helped out by the fact that Porter didn't play in the second half, so he got some extra minutes there. And Tomas Satoransky had 11, 5, and 6 in his 35. Again, another player helped out a little bit by Porter's absence. Satoransky, of course, is a guy that we own until Wall comes back, but it looks like that Johnny will be back next game, so a preemptive drop of Satoransky. If you're in this desperation streaming situation, it's something that you should be looking at. Marcin Gortat, pretty good game from him. 10 and 12 in 28 minutes. You know, I've been highly critical of what he's been able to do this season. I think the extra minutes in this game, there's a couple of factors, the Otto Porter injury, but also the fact that the Wizards were going up against Andre Drummond, getting that bigger body in there really did help him get those extra playing time, but I wouldn't be looking at him for any sort of long-standing contribution or anything along those lines. Bradles Beal had 15 and 5, an inefficient night. He had a knee issue, bang knees, but he was fine to play. On to the Pistons. Blake Griffin had an MRI on his ankle. We'll get the results tomorrow. Doesn't appear too serious. He sat out this one. So Tone Tolliver started 14-2-2 with a triple one for Tone. He's been getting mid-20s in minutes the last couple of games and a fairly reliable three-point streaming option, but that's about it. Well, Drummo went off 24-23-4 with a block. The assists, as you'll note, back up without Griffin around. Expect that to drop. Well, Reggie Bullock had 14 with 2 triples and 3 assists. I've sung his praises all year in terms of his efficiency, which I doubted would keep, but they definitely has kept. He's been an excellent shooter. He just doesn't do very much in the other areas for fantasy, so he's far from a must-own guy. I'm hating the way that Luke Kennard's being used. Minutes have dropped down to 19 here. 8-1-2 with 2 steals, while Stan Johnson played 37 and 11 minutes for Jim Ennis. There's an absolutely zero reason why Kennard, who was playing big minutes and playing them bloody well, should have his minutes reduced. But it's just that standard bullshit rookie mentality from Van Gundy that is impacting what Kennard can do. Reggie Jackson is going to be the focus of our player spotlight, so we'll talk about him a bit more later. 13-2-8 on 16 shots with 28 minutes. So the minutes are back to normal, so he has that value if you can deal with the more than occasional bad free throw percentage night. Let's go to the next game. It's the Chicago Bulls and the Miami Heat. The Bulls were without Zach LaVine, Chris Felizio, Chris Dunn, Lauri Markkanen, and then Robin Lopez was ejected in this one as well. So a bunch of players not in the lineup. Noah Vonleh started, and he does what he does, grabs rebounds. 14 and 13, added in the 2 steals, and I would expect Markkanen, and the Bulls got a back-to-back, they play Friday. I would expect Markkanen to be back for that one. I would not expect LaVine or Dunn to play. As for Felizio, he's up in the air. But when Markkanen returns, and if Felizio plays, the 33 minutes isn't going to be there for Vonleh, nor is 32 minutes for Punch Bob, who had 13 and 16 with 2 steals and a block. And I'd have Portis over Vonleh pretty clearly. But if we hear that that Felizio's out, then Vonleh's an interesting rebound stream. And if Markkanen's out as well, then there is some more value there for Noah. Justin Holiday played 22 minutes, 13 points, while Robin Lopez played 31 minutes before his ejection, 13 and 6 with 3 blocks. The Bulls are committed to not playing Omer Asik a single second, which is fine. David Nwaba, a good game from him, 15, 7, and 4, but his games are just so inconsistent that I don't think that you should be adding him outside of deeper leagues. Well, Denzel the Hammer Valentine, he had a triple 4, 4 points, 4 rebounds, and 4 assists with 2 steals. Far from his best night as he shot just 2 from 10, and campaign had 11 with 5 assists. His numbers have dipped a little bit. I think he's still a valuable 12-team league guy. If Quinn Cook's available, I would make that switch, though, especially with Cook playing on the Saturday and Payne playing on the Friday. That does make a little bit of a significant difference, to be honest. On to the Heat, Joshy Richardson, who I was getting into arguments with people on Twitter yesterday when they were telling me that 2018 Dwayne Wade is a better player than Josh Richardson, and Richardson is at best the Heat's fourth player. He's not. He's either their best player or their second best player. 22, 5, and 3 for Joshy with 2 blocks and a triple, while the other guy who's in consideration for the best player award is Goran Dragic, the Iron Shoulder, and he had 17, 5, and 5. Hassan Whiteside returned, and he played pretty well. 19 minutes for Whiteside, 8-7-4 with a steal and 2 block. It was always a good opposition for him going against the Bulls. The minutes were low, but his return, it did impact Jim Johnson, who had 2-8-2 and still played 30 minutes, and Kelly Olynyk, who had 11-3. But Olynyk played only 17 minutes, mainly because of foul trouble. So it's not a full, true indication of how Olynyk's minutes are going to go with Whiteside back. but he's definitely not going to be producing the same way he was when Hassan was seated. Bam Adebayo also returned and played 12 minutes. Tyler Johnson sprained his ankle. He lasted 12 minutes. Apparently, it's not that serious. He did have a sprained ankle earlier in the year, which cost him a couple of weeks of action. If he does miss some time, then Scooter Magruder entered the rotation here. The Duke gets a couple of extra minutes, and Dwayne Wade plays a little bit more, but nothing that's really, you know, really all that 12-team valuable outside of Allington's three-point streaming. Wade had 8, 3, and 4 with 3 steals in 18 minutes and really just a deeper league sort of a guy. Also, good game from Justice Winslow, who'd been fairly poor recently, 13 and 9 with a triple one from him. He also benefited from Tyler Johnson's absence. The next game, the Thunder and the Spurs. Paulie George, 26, 7, and 6 with 4 steals, while Mallow was pretty piss poor once more. 9 points, at least they all came from 3. 2 assists, 2 steals, and a block, so some peripheral numbers, but overall he has just been really disappointing. An 8% usage for Carmelo Anthony is not something you expect. Westbrook, 19, 11, and 5. As for Mallow, I've said it before, he's not a 10-team league guy, and he's probably not a 12-team league must-own. Corey Brewer, whose minutes and production had dipped lately, the minutes stayed lower, just 29, but the production was back 14, 2, and 3 with 2 steals, but I wouldn't be using him as a must-own. He's more of a steals streamer at this stage, while Steve-O Adams, we talked about him already. Very little to talk about with the bench guys, Pat Patterson or Jeremy Grant. For the Spurs, DeJounte Murray is just such a weird point guard. Only 7 points, but 8 rebounds, 7 assists, 5 steals, and a block. People will avoid DeJounte Murray in drafts. My point guard needs to score. My point guard needs to hit threes, which is just bullshit. It's bullshit. You can get threes from any other position. It's all about looking at the different areas that he helps in. The rebounding is elite. Yeah, he can assist, the steals, he blocks shots. That's where all his value comes from. Value is value, and you can get it. You build your team however you want, and some interesting things you can do with him in a fantasy team in terms of punt build. But he was really, really impressive. The scoring, he's just never going to be a 20-point scorer, I don't believe. LaMarcus Aldridge played through his knee issue, 25 and 11 with 2 blocks. I'm not the biggest LaMarcus Aldridge fan. You've heard me say it all the time, but he has been impressive in carrying this team in Kawhi Leonard's absence. And I think at this point, Kawhi is not coming back. I could be 100% wrong. I just don't think he's coming back this season at all. Dan Green moved to the bench so Pau Gasol could start. 6 and 12 for Gasol in 25 minutes, while Green played 27 and had 11 and 4. They're really just situational type fantasy options or deeper league guys. Kyle Anderson, only the 23 minutes. Surely he's not still being owned in any 12-team leagues. You can move on from him, I believe. The next game we look at, the Indiana Pacers and the Sacramento Kings. Oladipo was great. The 3 steals and a block, that has been absolutely ridiculous from him this year. His ability to get steals and blocks also added 24 points, while Daz Collison only 8 points, but 9 assists, 3 steals and a block. And if he's on your wire, you grab him. Bojan Bogdanović, this is as Bojan a line as you get. 25 points on 54% shooting, so high percentage shooting. 2 triples, literally nothing else. No rebounds, no assists. How do you get 0 rebounds, 0 assists, 0 steals, 0 blocks in 36 minutes? Bojan is as streaky as they come, and that makes owning him sometimes a tough proposition, but there's something there. Miles Turner was piss poor, 9, 3, and 5, a steal and 2 blocks, and only played 27 minutes as Domantas Sabonis got some extra playing time ahead of him. I think that Turner is at a real nadir in his dynasty value, and he's going to be a very, very valuable pick even in redraft leagues next year, as he will slide outside the top 50 and 60 in many different leagues, probably outside the top 70 you'll find him in some. And I think there's going to be some value there. As for Sabonis, 24 minutes, 8 and 8. That's just deep league stuff. Corey Joseph was nothing. Well, Thaddeus Young, he was good actually. 18 and 8, and he deserves a 12-team spot. For the Sacramento Kings, no Zach Randolph, no Garrett Temple for the 4th consecutive game. We just never hear anything about Randolph anymore. Garrett Temple, they put him as out in their notes, and you just don't hear anything. Is Randolph playing? Nobody knows. But once they announce Scalabissiere as a starter, just assume that Randolph isn't going to play. It's piss poor reporting from the Kings side of things and from the reporters. Someone asked a question, hey, Randolph going to play today? Has anybody seen him in the building? Is he around? How much? Yeah, what's he doing? Where is he? How many headbands did he go through? Like, just something. We're hearing nothing about it. But at least a pattern's arriving where if he doesn't start, he doesn't play. Budrick had 27 and 4 with 4 triples in 31 minutes, but this rotation's just so all over the place. Bogdan Bogdanović played 40 minutes in this one. He played like 26 the other day. Yeah, he was great, 21, 3, and 4, and you know I'm a big Bogdan fan, but the consistency's not there. Frank Mason outplayed De'Aaron Fox once again. 12 points for Mason in 20 minutes, while Foxy had 8, 2, and 5 in 28 minutes. Neither of those guys are 12-team league players. But Fox is producing less fantasy value than what Mason is. Labissiere was bad. 2, 3, and 2 in 26 minutes, while Corley Stein had 19, 7, and 5. A big game from him, but still only the 27 minutes played as Dave Yeager coaches to lose. Corley Stein is probably the only one of those guys that I'd feel comfortable at saying you should own. Yeah, Bud, you can make a case for. I like Bogdan. You could say Scal in certain situations, but none of those guys feel at all like must-own players. The last game of the night, the Milwaukee Bucks and the Golden State Warriors. Bledsoe was great, 23-6 with 3 steals. Middleton, who had a trip to the locker room and then returned, 23-3-2 with 2 steals. All of those guys performed well. Even Jabari Parker got 25 minutes and 14 points. Again, more of a point streamer than a must-own 12-team league guy. Joe Prunty made the change at shooting guard. He reinstated Tone Snell and put Jason Terry to the bench. Snell did what he does, and that's nothing, 3 points, while Terry had 8 points with 3 steals, and that's now 8 steals in the last 2 games combined for Jason Terry. That's almost his season quota, so I reckon you can probably count on that not happening again. The Muppet John Henson had 4, 5, and 5. Yes, he had 5 assists with a steal and 2 blocks, while Tyler Zeller soaked up all of the remaining center minutes. Did not go with Yanni at center at all, which I think is always a failing, but they got the victory, so I can't criticize too much. I think Henson still is a 12-team league sort of a player. Brando Jennings, street hunger, 5 points for him in his 15 minutes. On to the Warriors, talked about Quinny Cook already. Draymond returned, 11, 5, and 6, 2 steals and a block. That's as Draymond as you can get. While Kevin Durant was back, he lasted 7 minutes and was ejected. Because I had no issue with him leaving Oklahoma City. I had no issue with him making that move to go to Golden State. How dare you join the team that beat you? I have no problem with that. But he's such a pissy bitch these days. He complains about all these fanboys and blog boys and then, yelling at the referee about it. Like, just calm down, man. Like, I feel like he's one of the fakest tough guys in the NBA. Man, just accept you're a nerd. Simple. I don't know. He's just, this behavior from Durant now gets under my skin. 100. I wanted him not to go to Golden State because I just want chaos in the NBA. I want shit to just get mixed up. Right? I have no problem with him doing it. But the way he's acting at the moment is really weird. It's bothersome. Pat McCaw started over Uncle P. He had 12, 3, and 3 in 35 minutes, but Klay Thompson's likely to return over the weekend, so McCaw and Young's value is clearly on the decline, while JaVale McGee started and Zaza played only 4 minutes at center because the man that I spotlighted in yesterday's player spotlight, Kevon Looney, continues to crush it. Another steal, another 3 blocks, 8 and 4. There is, it's outside of Nerlens Noel, I'm not sure that there, or because John Isaac's not playing, I'm not sure there's a better defensive stats streamer guy out there. He played 23 minutes with only Klay Thompson missing. Yes, Durant missed the second half. But Looney is blocking shots like they're going out of fashion. He just continues to do it, and that steal rate is extraordinarily underrated. He can actually help you even in 12-team leagues, assuming you need steals and blocks. But really, really impressive from Kevon Looney. Yeah, super, super impressive stuff from him over recent times. Let's go player spotlighting now. We're heading to Detroit, and we're going to be talking about Reginald Jackson of the Detroit Pistons, one of the trio of Reggies in the NBA, one of the trio of Reggies on the Detroit Pistons. Let's talk a little bit about this guy who, I guess some people, he's got a bit of a shitbloke reputation. Not right at the top of my shitbloke rankings, but definitely not the greatest bloke of all time. And of course, dealing with some injury concerns have made his last 2 seasons really piss poor. 27 minutes last year, only 26.5 this season. He's found himself outside the top 140, averaging 14, 3, and 5 on 43% shooting. So why is he so bad? Because those numbers aren't terrible. The reason is he gets no steals. None. 0.6 steals per game this year, 0.7 the year before, 0.7 the year before that. Yeah, these are really, really bad numbers. And again, looking at it over on Cleaning the Glass, for his position as a point guard, his steal rate of 1% is in the 15th percentile, meaning he is worse than 85% of all point guards in the NBA, and also worse than 80% of point guards in terms of blocking shots. Now, that's not his job, but he just can't even do anything in that area either. He can't shoot. His shooting percentages are poor. His 2-point percentage is actually not too bad, but you know, middle of the road effective field goal percentage. It's not like he's taking poor shots. His mid range shots, 75th percentile, which is not the best, but it's not the greatest. And he's hitting them at a decent rate, but he doesn't get to the rim and he can't finish at the rim. Over the last 3 years, he has not been, and this is his time as a full-time starter, he can't get into the top 50% of point guard finishes at the rim in terms of percentage, and he doesn't get there either, which is a real downfall for his game or for any point guard's game. And he's 28 years of age, coming off knee issues and a severe ankle injury, and you don't think that any sort of explosiveness is going to allow him to get to the rim at a higher rate moving forward, and that means he's going to have to rely more upon his shooting, which is not good. Last year was a disaster for him on off-wise, a negative 11.3. This year, he's a positive. In his first year in Detroit, he was a positive as well. But nothing when you look at his advanced numbers stand out as, you know, extremely good or anything along those lines. The last 2 years, well below average in his win shares. PER hovering around 15 for those two seasons and has never posted an above average true shooting percentage throughout his eight seasons in the NBA. Seven seasons in the NBA. Poor defensive metrics, poor overall box score plus minuses, and yeah, injuries have really impacted the last two seasons, because he put up, his first year in Detroit, he put up some pretty good numbers. But having this knee issue for all of last season, having this ankle injury for almost all of this year, heading into your age 29 season next season, with a reduced ability to get to the rim, which is already bad anyway, not able to finish, can't shoot, and it's, you know, where does this leave him? On the positive side, you know, his ability to get assists are pretty nice. Like, we like his ability to get those assists. They can be useful. He's in the 78th percentile in terms of assist percentage. The lowest he's been in his time in Detroit has been 65th. So, you know, in the upper levels of getting assists for point guards, decently high usage, which can help you really hammer through points category as well. The positive thing I can say about him long term is the Pistons don't really have a method of getting a better point guard. Their pick this year is top four protected. It goes to the Clippers if it's not in the top four. But if it ends up in the top four, like, what do they do with that spot? Do they take Luka Doncic? Maybe, but I don't think that Stan... Oh, sorry, let's try again. I know that Stan Van Gundy is not handing over point guard reins to a European. I don't even know what Doncic is. He's not really a point guard. He's like a off-ball ball handler, primary initiator. Van Gundy, there is no way that that's happening. There's no other point. He's not drafting Trae Young and giving him you shouldn't draft Trae Young in the top four anyway, in my belief. But he's not drafting Trae Young and giving him the keys. He has no ability as in free agency to attract a starting point guard. Ish Smith's not up to it. Langston Galloway's not up to it. Dwight Bikes isn't taking the job. So I think we're in for another 28-minute, 27-minute per game season from Reggie Jackson next year. Now, maybe he does draft Trae Young. Maybe he does get Doncic, if they even keep this pick, which is a big if in itself. It's a massive if. It's like a 1-2% chance. My odds might be well off there. It's a massive, massively low chance of that going on. And when that doesn't happen, then there's no way that Reggie Jackson isn't the starting point guard for this team. There's none. And he'll play his 28 minutes, and he'll be this guy that averages 15 points. He'll average 6 assists, but he won't hit threes. He's not a strong rebounder, and he's terrible at steals, and his field goal percentage. His last four seasons' field goal percentage, 43.4, 43.4. 41.9 and 43.4. So I guess we can have a look at him and expect that he's going to shoot 43.4 with bad three-point shooting, good free throw percentage, low attempts, which will only, in my opinion, start to decrease. Will he ever have another top 100 season? I think the odds of it happening are marginally ahead of the odds of the Pistons keeping their pick for this year. I think that he is a back-end starting point guard in the NBA. Would I prefer a guy like Quinn Cook over Reggie Jackson? Maybe, especially on a team with Griffin and Drummond, someone who can actually go out there, initiate, but also spot up and shoot, which Jackson can't do. I think his time as a starting point guard is limited, and if it was on any other team who had an ability to attract another point guard next season, he could very easily have transitioned into a backup, but I just don't think that's happening in Detroit. He also got a pretty hefty contract there also, which might preclude him from being traded into a worse situation. So I think he might get one more year, but maybe it's of top 130 value, maybe. And then after that, I think the decline from Reggie Jackson will be fairly precipitous, and you'll see him become a Monte Ellis, someone who's out of the league when you think, shit, why aren't they playing anymore? Because they've fallen off quite a bit. And I think that's the path of things for Reggie Jackson. I don't know this, of course. This is just an opinion based on watching him. And I'm not a Reggie Jackson hater by any means. But I'm just trying to look at this analytically and have a look at what he does, the injury concerns, the coach, the statistical profile of guys his size and the way that he plays it. It just doesn't look great for him as we head into his long-term future. Let's talk some DFS. We will start with the perfect DFS line of the night. From Thursday, at point guard, DeJounte Murray 43.1 and Eric Bledsoe 42.6. Bogdan Bogdanovic had 30.6 and Oladipo had 43. They're your shooting guards. At small forward, Joshie Richardson had 37.5 and Paulie George had 52.4. Markeith had 39.7 and Noah Vonleh 36.1 as your power forwards, while Andre Drummond had 59.6 for a total of 384.6, and that cost $59,800. Over on DraftKings, it was DeJounte at 38.5, Bogdan at 33.25, Markeith at 36, and it is probably one of the more ludicrous positional assignments that I've ever seen, that Markeith Morris is listed as a small forward on DraftKings, or small forward eligible. Has he ever played a single second as a small forward in the past 5 years? Probably not. I could look that up, but I haven't. Punch Bob, 39.5, Vonleh, 37.25, Joshie Richardson, 36.75, Paulie George, 51.75, and Drummond had 61.75 for a total of 334.75, and that cost $49,700. We've got 9 games on for Friday. If you haven't been listening all week, I'm going to throw the PSA out there again. Watch your DFS exposure at this time of the year. There is a lot of shittiness that goes on, and you could be someone that suffers because of that. This first game is not included in the FanDuel main slate. I think it's one of those single game standalone, so the salaries are all over the place. I'm not going to be talking about FanDuel pricing for Chicago and Orlando. We'll look at it from a DraftKings perspective. So let's talk some point guards. Shelvin Mack, 4,600. No Evan Fournier, no Terry Ross, no John Simmons in this one, but we could get a return of John Isaac, and Wes Iwundu is question. Actually, John Simmons is doubtful, but for our purposes, we'll consider him not playing. Wes Iwundu is questionable as well. Mack has been putting up some pretty strong numbers. His lowest score in his last five is 2,300. No, that's a high score. It's 23 points, which at 4,600 is pretty good value. So I'm all about using Shelvin Mack here. Campaign's at 5,700. Now, the production from Payne hasn't been great lately, but this matchup, we've talked about it so often. Point guards against the Magic is an elite matchup, so you can absolutely consider Payne a GPP guy. I wouldn't want to go cash, though. Well, DJ Augustine, he has a strong matchup too at 5,800. Now, there are a lot of other good spots on DraftKings, but Augustine, Payne, and Mack are all playable guys here. Jaren Grant, probably not. Rodney Purvis, Ryan Archer, Jacano, and the sexy boy, Sean Kilpatrick. I don't think we'll look at any of those guys. David Nwaba's at 4,500. A strong game from Nwaba today, but he is as inconsistent as pretty much anybody. We don't know what his role will be game to game. 25 minutes, 30 minutes, 35 minutes. It varies quite often, David Nwaba. So at 4,500, I'd only be tournamenting him, and that's probably even a stretch. The Hammer, Denzel Valentine at 6,400 is too expensive. Well, Justin Holiday at 33. I'm okay with Holiday at 33. I think that is a GPP play because One of those days, the shots are going to go in. It won't happen often, but it can happen. At small forward, Mario Hezonja is at 5,600. The value is dipping a little because John Isaac will be back most likely, but we're coming off a 39-pointer from Hezonja, and it's a great matchup, so I think you can consider him. He should start at shooting guard with Isaac at the three and then play some backup 3 minutes as well. So I think Mario is fine to use, especially with the matchup in his favor. Well, as Gordon's at 8,400. That's a bit expensive. Good matchup, but probably a little bit expensive. I think there are better ways to go about spending that cash. At power forward, Punch Bob's at 58. Love the price for Portis here, especially if we get a Felizio out or a Robin Lopez suspension, which may or may not impact things. Punch Bob's at 58. Really do like him here at that sort of a price. Well, John Isaac comes in at 3,800. With his ability to get steals and blocks at that salary in this matchup, I'm okay to use him. I think they'll play him 20-22 straight away, and he can easily exceed that value straight off the bat. Noah Vonleh, yeah, if Markkanen's out, you can consider him. I think Lowry will be back, though. On Bismack Biyombo, that's a strong no from me. As for Felizio at 4,500, he'd been playing fairly well, but dealing with this sore back would lead me to say no. Nick Vucevic, 8,100. Love the price. Love the matchup. I'm in on Vuce. He had 51 last game. And while the Nets aren't the Bulls, or the Bulls aren't the Nets, they're not far off. So he could be an option here as well. All right. Let's go on to the next game now. We're talking Philadelphia 76ers and the Atlanta Hawks. I've already spoken about it earlier in the show, if you're just tuning in now, that Joel Embiid is out and will likely be out for the remainder of the regular season. Injury-wise, Dennis Schroeder is doubtful for Atlanta. Malcolm Delaney's out, while DeAndre Bembry is questionable. I don't expect Bembry to play. Amir Johnson missed last game for Philadelphia. He is questionable. Now, if he is out, then it's all aboard Rashawn Holmes. Ersan Ilyasova gets a mammoth boost, and Dario Saric probably gets a couple extra minutes. Justin Anderson also questionable, but not likely to be a part of the rotation, nor is Timothy Luwawu-Cabarro. At point guard, Isaiah Taylor, they've bumped him to 4,800. I don't really even care. I still think that it's a good cash play on FanDuel. He's been putting up numbers pretty consistently. Josh Magette, the backup, he's at 3,500. Yeah, don't really see too much there. Markel Fultz at 4,600. Two really strong games since returning to action here. 26 points last one, but playing exclusively as a backup to Ben Simmons. Maybe that changes with Embiid out and they try and run him a little bit next to Simmons as another high usage scoring option. Not sure they'll do that yet, but if I'm using Fultz, it's only because the matchups are positive and I want to take a GPP flyer. That's about it. Shooting guard Damo Lee's at 4,000. Yeah, been pretty good. I don't think that that's a bad GPP option. Coming off a 32-pointer in a game where he had his fingers retaped due to a dislocation, so his minutes are fairly secure, while JJ Redick and Marco Bellinelli are only obviously GPP guys. The artist formerly known as Taurean Prince, they dipped his salary down to 7,000, and I'm happy to go back to him here. Yes, Bob Cove's a pretty tough defensive matchup, but Prince is doing so many things and such a huge focus of this offense that he's just bludgeoning his way into minutes. As for Covington at 6,000, averaging 30 over the last five, the Embiid absence maybe forces more usage onto him, which can be a good thing. It might also not be, but of course his value comes from rebounding, steals, and blocks. And without Embiid, his ability to get rebounds actually does increase a bit there. So I think that Covington at 6,000 is a worthwhile consideration. Amir Johnson's a minimum salary player, and while he isn't sexy, I think you can get 20 points out of Amir as a starting center, and that would make him a strong cash option there. Ilyasova at 41, I also really like, while the Baptist John Collins is down to 5,500, and yes, his last couple of games have been subpar, but I am ready to go back onto him here in this one, while Ben Simmons at 9,600. Let's go with Simo. I think he can crush this team. He should take on a little bit of extra usage. Yes, he won't have Embiid to run the pick and pop stuff with or to really draw that attention away, but he can still obviously find the passes, and the matchups are real positive for Simo. So I like him. And Saric at 6,600. He's coming off a 54-pointer. I think the biggest impact here is the ability for him to get more usage with Embiid out, probably a few more minutes, and perhaps play a little bit closer to the rim and be a little bit more efficient, which can actually really work in his favor to be a 35-36 pointer. he is in consideration for sure. While Rishaun Holmes at 3,800, I think you have to use him at center, one of the best options out there. The Undertaker's at 54, Dwayne Dedman. He'd been quietly pretty consistent, and I don't think that's a bad way to go if you want to fade away from Holmes in GPP, but it's pretty bloody hard to go past Holmes, and I don't think that I would be doing that. While the Moose, Mike Muscala, also dropping 25 on the reg. He's at 4,300, which I think I already mentioned. And I don't hate that as a cash option as well, but clearly Holmes is in the better spot there. Over on DraftKings for this game, Amir and Ersan, yeah, 35 and 4,000 respectively. There's some GPP upside, but you can quite comfortably throw them into cash there. While Isaiah Taylor, Johnny Collins, Rishaun Holmes, and Ben Simmons all have supreme cash appeal. There's strong value in a bunch of these guys for this game. Šarić at 68, maybe a little bit too highly priced on DraftKings, and Damo Lee's not as exciting as what he may be on FanDuel. And what a sentence that is to say Damian Lee and exciting without using the word not in 2018. The Denver Nuggets and the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Thunder are favored by 3.5. They're coming off a back-to-back after a loss to the Spurs. A key game for them to get a win here. The total is 223.5, so a decently high total for this game. Point guards, Russ, 11,400. I think you have to almost use Russ in every cash lineup. Well, that's not 100% true, but a Westbrook-Holmes cash situation is, I think, going to be a pretty strong one. Really like Westbrook here. The Blue Arrow at 7,400, Jamal Murray, he's getting tons of shots, tons of minutes, averaging almost 36.5 over the last five, but that salary is pretty restrictive, and I think there are better ways to spend that money. Ray Felton, no. Shooting guard, Farton Will Barton down to 6,600. I'm in on that. I know he can be terrible, and there is a risk using him in cash, but I'm in on him at 6,600. I think that's a pretty strong cash play, and there's a comfortable 45-50 point upside there for Barton. Devin Harris is a no. As is Abrines Ferguson and Malik Beasley at small forward. Cordy Brewer's at 4,400. Bounce back today, but I'm not buying that. Well, Paulie George at 7,700. I am in on Paul George here. I think that's a strong cash mid-price sort of a guy. Really like that. While Baby Neck Wilson Chandler's at 52. And with a Paul George, a Paul George potential matchup on Baby Neck, that does not look good for him. At power forward, Melo's at 5,500. You cannot trust him in cash at all. Yes, he can occasionally have these scoring games. He almost had a 50-pointer at some point this year, but he's just been shit. So you can throw him into a tournament, but he's not my single-entry tournament guy, but he would be a multi-tournament player. People will sour on him, and you'll get some value there. Millsap at 6,600. I don't see it for that at all. Jeremy Grant, Mason Plumlee, Pat Patterson, Trey Lyles, no. At center, Steve-O Adams at 7,200, subpar today. That's what happens when you play against the Spurs, though. Big men against the Spurs can be a concern. The Nuggets, while they've been pretty good defensively against centers recently, historically some big games have come against Nikola Jokic. So I think that Adams is okay using him here. While Jokic comes in at 9,800, and Steven Adams is a really negative impact. It's impacted him negatively in the past and plenty of other centers right across the NBA. So Jokic is okay to use, but there are better guys out there to use at that center position, hashtag Rishaun Holmes. On DraftKings, for cash and tournaments, I love Jokic at 91 here. That's a great price. Happy to use that. Westbrook's a strong one. Farton, Will Barton, and Jamal Murray at 6,800 also have cash and tournament value. Melo at 5,500, I'm less interested there with him, with the other options on DraftKings. While Paulie George at 81 is not in my player pool on DraftKings as opposed to FanDuel. Let's go to the next game. We're talking Phoenix Suns and the Houston Rockets. This could just be a shit show of epic proportions. Earlier this year, the Rockets dropped 40. No, let's try again. They dropped 90 in the first half against the Suns, and there are just so many injuries to watch out for in this one. Now, Jim Harden and Clint Capela will be back, but Chris Paul's listed as questionable with his hip. Devin Booker is questionable with that hand that's caused him to miss the last week and a bit. TJ Warren is out. Trevor Ariza is questionable with an elbow. Lord Alfred Payton is questionable with his left knee tendinopathy. Luke Marmute is questionable with a sore left knee, and Alex Len is questionable with his ankle. So there are 14 different what-if scenarios created over on Basketball Monster for all the different things that can happen in this game. So it's clearly, yeah, real issues that we need to pay attention to. One thing I feel pretty confident with is that Gerald Green's going to work his way to 30 minutes somehow. And that's an option. Of course, in Phoenix, who knows what goes on? I like Josh Jackson here, but you could get an opportunity for Shaq Harrison. It could be Tyler Ulis. You could get an opportunity for Marquise Chris. There's just so much unknown in this that using anyone in cash is really going to be tough, especially on FanDuel. Now, at point guard, Chris Paul, I don't think even going through this game by position is worthwhile considering how much unknown there is. But what I will touch on is a few guys who I think are worth looking at for tournaments and for cash. For cash, I don't really see anybody here on FanDuel, but $6,900 for Devin Booker if he plays is a strong tournament option. Jim Harden at 11-3, he could easily drop 60 in 28 minutes, so that's a tournament play, but in cash, I don't have the full confidence in it. Capella at 7,800 could absolutely torch this Suns team, could play 22 minutes, but there is 50-point tournament upside here. There's, you know, you could say there's a 36-point floor. I would also counter there's a 20-point floor. Big source, Alan Williams at 3,700. I'd probably take that in a tournament if Len is out especially, but he hasn't really done much in his two games this year, averaging 14 points in 17 minutes. Has not been the same player. Eric Gordon at 58. If Chris Paul sits, then I'd love Eric Gordon here. If Chris Paul plays, then I'm not as enthused. Joshy Jackson's at 7,600. That's the number. And he's been really good. But if Booker plays, then that price becomes too high. And if Booker's out, then is there much actual upside in that? Probably not. It's just a real shit game to look at it from now. But by the time you get to 7 p.m. Eastern, there might be value to open up right across this slate, or right across this game in particular. I think Marquise Chris is also an interesting tournament sort of a guy. From a DraftKings point of view, yeah, very similar stuff. Harden and Capella are some GPP upside guys. You might look at Big Source. Yeah, Devin Booker at 75 is too high. 87 for Chris Paul is too high. Josh Jackson at 74 is too high. You want nothing to do with Alfred Payton. Tyler Ulis is entirely dependent on whether Payton plays, in my opinion. And then at 4,700, he'd become a pretty strong option. But if Booker plays, does that negatively impact him as well? There's just so much uncertainty with this entire game that using any of these guys in cash with what we currently know, I think would be a pretty big mistake. The next game we look at is the New Orleans Pelicans and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Kevin Love, we haven't had an update. He missed the last game. I would say he's unlikely to play. But we don't know that at this point. Rajon Rondo, also questionable, and we don't know the status of Kyle Korver, who's missed the last four or so games due to his brother's death. At point guard, Rondo's at 5,700, has been putting up some big numbers. If he plays, I'm okay with using him, especially given the nature of the matchup against Cleveland. While George Hill at 4,600 just doesn't do enough. Low upside, low floor is strong fade territory. Ian Clark started last game for Rondo, did very little, 10 points in 29 minutes, which is shit, at 3,700. But I'd be okay looking at him in a tournament if Rondo is out. Jordan Clarkson, no thanks. Drew Holiday at 8,100. Drew averages 51 points the last three times against the Cavs, which is an astonishingly large amount. At 8,100, you get 50 points. You're really, really happy with that. I just don't think that you can lock that in cash. And tournament, maybe you look at it, but I think there are better ways around it. While Rocket Rodney Hood at 4,400, just nothing of interest.
LeBron James.
He's at 12,300. So you better be pretty bloody happy with everyone else you've got if you're using him in a cash lineup. But you can get away with that with an Isaiah Taylor, perhaps, with a Rashawn Holmes, some cheaper options around that. And LeBron's going to get you 55 to 60 pretty much every time he's out there. So he has some value, obviously. Etwan Moore at 48. He's the classic low floor, low ceiling player that I'm not really all that interested in. And I don't believe you should be either. Kevin Love at 7,500. I couldn't use it. Well, Tone Davis at 12-3, it's in a similar spot to LeBron. That's pretty bloody expensive, but we know how good he is. And I'd feel better spending 12-3 on Davis than LeBron, but there's still an element of risk. Shek Diallo and Nick Mirotic, 38 and 4,600 respectively. I would definitely take Diallo over Mirotic, but neither of them are cash guys. And given the injury situation or the lack of injury situation in the front court currently for New Orleans outside of Boog, I don't think we look at either of them. Laz Nance at 5,500. He dropped 30 points in 20 minutes last game. If they announce that he's starting, which he 100% should be, then at 5,500, he is a GPP guy. But his proclivity for fouling and the proclivity of Larry Drew to make shit lineup decisions makes him almost an impossible guy to use in cash. While Jeff Green,
my name is Jeff,
he is at 4,100 and it'd only be for a tournament. Emeka Okafor, Tristan Thompson, let's move on. DraftKings, I think more at 4,600, maybe in a tournament, but not super interested. LeBron at 11,800 and Tone Davis at 11,600. They're massively strong cash plays. Super into those ones. Not much else that really massively stands out. I think Drew is too expensive. I think Rondo's too expensive for an unknown quantity in terms of his injury. Larry Nance at 53, all those same concerns come flooding back. There's just nothing that really stands out a huge amount for this game on DraftKings either. The next game, the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Dallas Mavericks. The Wolves are favored by 5.5. The total's 216.5. And going by the pattern, this should be a Salah Mejri game, meaning Nerlens Noel probably doesn't play. But we don't know that for sure at this stage. Dirk is listed as probable. Derrick Rose is questionable. Dwight Powell is probable. While JJ Barea has missed the last two games for personal reasons, and he is questionable. If Barea is out, the minutes are just going to be spread around Kyle Collinsworth, Jalen Jones, Aaron Harrison. So very little to look at. This Mavericks team has been just throwing some really weird-ass lineups out there a lot of the time. Jeff Teague's at 7,300.
My name is Jeff.
Love the matchup. No Jim Butler for Teague, and he has been disappointing lately, no doubt. Only 27 average over the last five, but I do feel a big one coming based on nothing statistical, just on a gut feel for Teague. So I'd be happy to roll with him. Well, Dennis Smith at 6,700. Dennis Smith, if he played 35 minutes, would absolutely destroy that value. The problem is they're just not letting him roll those sort of minutes, so it's hard to consider that an option. Tyus Jones, Yogi Ferrell, and JJ Barea are fades also. Jamal Crawford's at 4,000. I don't even care for that in GPPs. Well, Wigo at 6,700. Just, I don't know. I think it's not bad, but I'm not confident in the stability of him. Bielitsa's at 5,600, beat that value last game, but had been poor before that. I think it's hard to rely upon his production on a game-to-game basis. While the pencil Harrison Barnes and Dorian Finney-Smith are two small forwards for Dallas, and two small forwards for Dallas that you shouldn't use. Throw in Doug McDermott into that group. At power forward, Dirk's at 4,500. Dirk has been playing fairly well, but I have zero trust in the minutes that he will play under Carlisle. Dwight Powell at 43, the minutes are too low. Taj Gibson at 53, not a bad cash play. We know that Tibbs will play him 38 minutes if he possibly could, and I think he can get you 30 points there pretty, not comfortably, but with a degree of confidence. Townsy, let's go with this guy. 10,900, it's a jump. It's only a $100 jump off his 81-point game against the Hawks, but this is an opportunity again for him to get a 60. And I think that he's a strongish play at 10-9. Yeah, I wouldn't use him. I'd rather go with a Tone Davis Rashawn Holmes combo than put Townsy in as my center. But if you want to go in a different direction, then Carlo is worth looking at. Salah Mejri probably isn't worth looking at. On DraftKings, Townsy at 10-1, super over that. Mejri at 3,100 on DraftKings, I think comes into tournament play. He can block shots at a decent rate. The last time he played, he had 20 points, which is a definitely good value. Almost 7x there for him. So he can be useful, but of course it's just for a tournament. While 37 for Jamal Crawford, the 3-point bonus scoring system on DraftKings helps him out as well. I think he's a tournament guy, but that's really about it. And very little else gets me excited. The Mavs guys are so hard to use given the way the minutes are currently being distributed. And the other guy you might consider is maybe Taj or Wigo, and I think their prices are too high on DraftKings. Let's go on to the next game now. We're looking at the Memphis Grizzlies. We're looking at the Utah Jazz. No spread currently out for this game. Tyreek Evans is out. Andy Harrison is out. While Ivan Rabb is listed as questionable for Memphis. There are going to be some questionable decisions made with these Memphis lineups. Absolutely no doubt about that. But they have been competitive. They've knocked off the Wolves. They've knocked off the Nuggets. They knocked off somebody else, the Trailblazers. So three teams in the playoff mix. So they're doing bits and pieces, weirdly enough, that could keep this game close. Ravishing Rick Rubio is at 7,700. That's a fairly high price to pay. And I like the spot for Rubio. I like the matchup. I'm just not totally into that price. I think at 7,000, I'd be happy to use Rubio. And on some of the other sites, he's quite a bit cheaper. Point guard for Memphis will probably be Mario Chalmers, but he'll likely play 20 minutes and Kobe Simmons will play 20 minutes and you'll get Wayne Seldon handling the ball and you'll get just bullshit after bullshit after bullshit. And I don't think any of those point guards are really worth looking at. The Don Mitchell's at 7,800. He's taking a lot of shots. We're aware of that. They're not going in at the moment, but if they do go in, then he'll smash through 7,800, which makes him a tournament player. The minutes aren't going anywhere. The usage isn't going anywhere. We just got to hope that the shots actually start falling in. Wayne Seldon's at 43. He is inconsistent. Tournament only there for him, I believe. At small forward, Jingling Joe's at 6,300. The numbers have been pretty good for Ingles recently, but they're definitely not high upside. And I think the floor might be a little bit low in a matchup where we don't really know where it's going to go. While Dylan Brooksy-Brooks is at 4,000. A good game from Brooksy last game, 32. But he's averaging 15 over the last five, and the minutes haven't really been going anywhere. He just has not been performing. Marshawn Brooks dropped 30 in his first game. He's at minimum salary. Why not? Throw him into a tournament. It's not like that Evans or Harrison have returned, so the opportunity for minutes are there for him. I don't think he'll be a 58% shooter on like 15 shot attempts like he was last game. But by all means, into a tournament, Brooksy can maybe do something. Chandler Parsons, Royce O'Neal. Yeah, Parsons was good last game at 3,700, almost 25 points. I don't think putting faith in Chandler Parsons is not an optimal DFS strategy. At power forward, Derek Favors, the minutes aren't there, and it could be another one of those cases here. Well, Jay Crowder at 4,800. I think you get 20 out of Crowder. Can you get 26? That's the question, and it's really just not a high upside play. Jermichael Green's at 5,000. The salary has dipped significantly because he is not that good. And this is about right where it should be, and I don't hate using that for cash. I think getting 25 or 26 out of Green's a realistic expectation. The problem was when he was in at 6,400 or 6,500, where there was just no value in that sort of a play. Jarrell Martin, the other guy who gets minutes at that position, he's at 4,500. I would much rather take him over Green. He's outperformed Jermichael recently. He's cheaper. That's the direction I'd rather go. Marc Gasol down at 7,100. Now, theoretically, the Jazz should be able to handle this one, so the Grizzlies won't feel the necessity to bring Gasol out early, and meaning that he can get you 40 points, and I think he can get you 40 pretty comfortably. But if things go awry and this game stays close after three quarters, Gasol just won't play, and that will limit him. But this is an interesting spot for him, he's done well against Gobert in the past. Got a 40 average over the last three against the Jazz. I think he's an interesting guy to look at. As for Gobert at 8,800, I hate that price. The production for him hasn't been anywhere near that, and he's also been bad against Gasol recently. Well, Deontay Davis is not someone I don't think we need to care about too much. But hey, random shit can go on, especially with the Grizzlies. On DraftKings, Ingles, Marshawn Brooks, Jay Crowder, and Marc Gasol are all in a tournament mix here. Especially Marshawn at $3,000, a really cheap price. While the Don at 75 and Ravishing Rick at 67. I love that Rubio price at 6,700. He should be able to get at least 35 here, at least against this Grizzlies team. So I love that salary for Rubio. Let's go on to the next one. We've got the Milwaukee Bucks on a back-to-back taking on the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers, Brandon Ingram and Brook Lopez are both probable, while Josh the Hitman Hart and Lonzo Ball are both questionable. You'll all be disappointed to know that Luol Deng has been ruled out of this game. Now, if Lonzo is out, I think that opens up some minutes on the wing. I think Ingram will play some point guard. It opens up a bit of Alex Caruso and Tyler Ennis, but they're not really GPP sort of guys. But what it does do is it pushes Ingram more to point guard, giving the future MVP Kyle Kuzma more minutes, and he becomes a more solid cash guy if Lonzo is out, as you know, convoluted as that may seem. If Hart plays, it impacts KCP a bit, and it takes value off some of those bench guys like Ware and Caruso and Ennis, who aren't big DFS influencers anyway. Love Bledsoe here. Yes, it's a back-to-back, but at 7,500 against a team that has been really bleeding points to point guards recently, I think he's in line for another opportunity at least to get 40. I like using him here. As for Lonzo at 7,800, the Bucks have been all season quite negative against point guards. Lonzo's more of a GPP guy because 50 points can come if he hits shots, 30 come if he doesn't, and that's quite a wide range of outcomes. Street Hunger Brandon Jennings, he's at minimum salary. I don't think you need to care too much there. At shooting guard, KCP's at 6,300. If you get Lonzo and the Hitman out, I think that that is a strong-ish cash play, and I would consider it. If both of them play, it's a little bit harder to use KCP. Well, Chris Middleton at 7,500 was strong again today. I think his upside might be considered a little bit low, but I think his floor is pretty bloody good at this point. The Hitman at 4,700, no thanks. Of course, Isaiah Thomas is out for the rest of the season. Jason Terry and Tone Snell, both listed as shooting guards. Terry putting up two really big games in a row, but you'd only be using him as a tournament guy, and I wouldn't feel great about that. At small forward, Yanni's at 11, bang, get him in. And Brandon Ingram at 6,000. I really like that price for Ingram. I'm not sure how the minutes restriction is going to go in this game, but he's got an opportunity to have extra ball handling responsibilities if Lonzo sits, and that could really crank some numbers up for Ingram. So I love that at 6,000, even with the groin issue he's dealing with. Our power forward, Jabari's at 46, no. Julius Randle at 8,400. Randle has been crushing all season, but he hasn't got to 40 once in the last five games. And that at that price, you need to get to 40, and he's just not. While Kyle Kuzma at 6,500, if Lonzo's out, I'm in on that. Otherwise, I think it's more of a tournament situation for the future MVP at center. Brook Lopez at 7,100. He could see his minutes reduced also if all these guys play, because again, it's a cascade effect. Kuzma plays a little bit more at the four. Randle plays a little bit more at the five, taking some of Brookie's minutes away. And 7,100 is a fair slug, and I don't think I would take it. Thon McCur, Channing Frye, Ivica Zubats, Tyler Zeller. It's just a group of guys that you want nothing to do with. I didn't talk about them up at John Henson, who's at 5,100, and I always feel like it's worth using him. He's got a floor, it feels like, of 22 or 23 points, which is pretty okay for cash, and he's got a 35, 40-point upside with his ability to get blocks and, apparently, according to today, multiple assists. Let's look at that one over on DraftKings. I like KCP at 6,200 for those reasons that I mentioned before, but it's more tournament-based, whereas Yanni, Bledsoe, and Ingram. Ingram's at 56 on DraftKings, which is a really great price. I think they're all cash-based options. Randle is way too high. I think Lonzo at 8,000 is also too high, and I dislike Middleton at 7,900. Let's wrap this up by looking at the last game. It's the LA Clippers against the Portland Trailblazers. Dame Lillard is back. The Blazers are favored by 6, and the total is 217.5. The Rooster, Danilo Gallinari, is questionable, and he is likely to return, so we should be able to get some Rooster action in this game. At point guard, Lillard's at 9,600. Bang, load him up. He's crushing almost every game he's out there. Love that one there. While Austin Rivers at 6,000. With the Rooster returning, it takes a little bit of the shine off Rivers, who loses a touch of usage here. So I think at 6,000, he might be just a tad too high. Shooting guard, Ty, the list manager, Wallace, 4,400, 31 points last game. I still believe that he will start because Milos Teodosic will be out. But of course, with Gallinari around, it takes a little bit away from Wallace. But still, his ability to get defensive numbers, get some rebounds and some assists, I think that Wallace at 4,400 can exceed that number. CJ McCollum is up to $8,000. Really good matchup for CJ. He's on a hot streak. I don't feel super confident with him in cash. He's been up and down a lot this season, and on such a strong run, I think a real turd could be coming. Lou Williams is at 6,800. Hasn't been really anywhere near that value recently, and with the Rooster returning, he will likely lose some touches, so that's a no from me. At small forward, Evan Turner's at 41. Just absolutely horrendous last game, but there is an ability for him to get some extra touches in a positive matchup with no Mo Harkless. I think he's worth a tournament look only. While the Rooster's at 55. The last time he returned from that glute injury, he was back in big minutes straight away. 5,500 for the Rooster. Absolutely a tournament guy to look at. Eddie Davis at power forward, no. The Chief, got to drop it.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
He is $6,100 in cash. You're crazy. In a tournament, sure. Could he have 50 points? Could he have 15 points? Anything's up in the air. For the Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu, while Toby Harris is just consistently cranking out 35, 33-point games, which makes him a strong cash floor guy with also pretty big upside. So I like Toby Harris quite a bit here. The table, Montrezl Harrell, is down to $4,000. I think that's a reasonable price, but I still don't love it here. Yusuf Nurkic playing some pretty good basketball at the moment. He's averaging 42 over the last five. This is tempting fate, saying that I think you can use him for cash. Because he could very easily have a 14-point game. But centers have been putting up big numbers against the Clippers and DeAndre Jordan, and Nurkic is on a pretty hot run. I'm okay with rolling that dice. While DeAndre at 7,500, I think he easily makes that value, and he is a pretty strong cash play here. Also, On DraftKings, Evan Turner, again a GPP guy, while the list manager, Ty Wallace, Yusuf Nurkic and Lillard are all fairly strong cash plays, with Lillard feeling extraordinarily strong given how well he's how well he has played of recent days. Let's wrap this up by looking at the other sites. On Yahoo for tournaments, we've got Jim Harden, Mallo, Mario Hezonja, David Nwaba, Evan Turner, Amir Johnson, Salah Mejri, Big Sauce, Alan Williams, Georgie Hill, Wayne Seldon, Vonleh, Marco Bellinelli. And for cash and tournaments, it's The Moose, Mike Muscala, Damo Lee, Rocket Rodney Hood, Dylan Brooks, John Isaac, Marquise Chris, Etwan Moore, John Henson, Ty Wallace, Rishon Holmes, Ersan Ilyasova, Shelvin Mack, DJ Augustine, Isaiah Taylor, Dario Saric, Vucevic, Ben Simmons, Nick Jokic, Townsy, and Russ Westbrook. On Moneyball for tournaments, it's Tone Davis, Benny Simmons, Nick Vucevic, Johnny Collins, Hezonja, Campaign, Denzel the Hammer Valentine, David Nwaba. And for cash and tournaments, Amir, Ty Wallace, Rishon Holmes, Evan Turner, Ilyasova, Shelvin Mack, Brando Ingram, Isaiah Taylor, Saric, Punch Bob, Farton Will Barton, Toby Harris, Ravishing Rick, Paulie George, Yusuf Nurkic, Dame Lillard, Nick Jokic, and Russell Westbrook. And on Draft Stars for tournaments, Ben Simmons, Nurkic, McCollum, The Blue Arrow, Mallow, Al-Farouq Aminu, Cameron Payne, David Nwaba, Salah Mejri, Big Sauce, and Chandler Parsons. And for cash, it's Seldon, Amir Johnson, Rishon Holmes, Evan Turner, Ilyasova, Shelvin Mack, Mario Hezonja, Isaiah Taylor, Punch Bob, Saric, Bledsoe, Toby Harris, Ravishing Rick, The Don, Paulie George, Rudy Gobert, Nick Vucevic, Dame Lillard, Karl Anthony Towns, and Big Russell Westbrook. We are done for another week. We have got 1.5 weeks left of the regular season. Podcast will be going right up until the day before the very last day of the season. I won't be recapping that final day of the NBA season, but then the podcast don't stop. We're going to be doing DFS stuff through the playoffs. There's going to be season reviews, draft previews, tons of other interesting things that I think of along the way as well. If you like the podcast and if it's helped you at all during the season, in season long or in DFS, you can help by going to patreon.com/redrock_bball or by also leaving a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. You can also find the podcast on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify and on YouTube, where you should give a thumbs up and you should leave a comment and you should also click that big red subscribe button. Check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network, especially the new baseball podcast we've got starting with opening day happening today. Hopefully your team won. Locked On NBA Net on Twitter and on Facebook and the website lockedonsports.com. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. David West.